welcome back to Silhouettes, a fashion history podcast all about the importance of the clothes we wear. Today I have a Valentine's special episode for you all with special guest Summer Ann Lee. Summer is a professor and fashion historian with an MA in Fashion and Textile Studies from the Fashion Institute of Technology, or FIT, and she currently teaches courses in the history of fashion and costume at FIT and Wagner College in New York City. And I'm interviewing Summer today all about her work with the Underpinnings Museum for an online digital exhibition named Incendiary, A History of Red Lingerie. This was a free digital exhibition examining the fashionability and societal perceptions of the colour red in European and American women's lingerie. So stay with us to find out why red is so associated with romantic sexual concepts and so intrinsically tied to lingerie and women's underwear and the socio-political connections. But before we start, for the first time on this podcast, I do just want to give a little bit of a disclaimer that we do talk about topics surrounding sex and sexuality. And so if that's something that you're not interested in listening to, absolutely fair enough. But also, if you're a younger listener, it's just something to take into account. Without further ado, let's get into it. The history of red lingerie with Summer Ann Lee. Okay, well, hello, Summer, and welcome back to the podcast. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me back, Belle. It's been a while. So, yeah, my name is Summer Ann Lee, and I am a fashion historian. I teach fashion history at Wagner College and the Fashion Institute of Technology here in New York, which is where I am. And I also curated an exhibition called Incendiary, A History of Red Lingerie with the Underpinnings Museum, and that's basically what brings me here today for this episode.
Wonderful. Yeah, I kind of wanted to do like a broadly Valentine's themed sort of series. And, you know, when I found out you were doing the work for that exhibition and all the research you've been doing on lingerie and women's undergarments, and I thought it's just perfect. So what really inspired your initial exploration of the color red in women's underwear and just undergarments in general?
That's a great question. And it's kind of an interesting answer, really, to answer that question on what inspired this research topic. I have to go back to, I think it was the summer of 2021 when I first got in touch with the Underpinnings Museum, and we kind of established that I was going to do a digital exhibition with them. And I proposed, I think it was three topics that I proposed to them. Mm. And two of the topics were things that really covered more just kind of like social evolutions of corsets and brassieres and how that related to fashion history and modernity. They were really things that were like covered in graduate school that I felt like I had a really good handle on. But when I was going through the Underpinnings Museum's collection, which everyone listening should do because it's a very stunning, beautiful collection of historic and vintage and contemporary lingerie. We're adding new things all the time too. When I was going through the collection, obviously a lot of the red pieces really stuck out to me because they're so bold and they're so striking and also, you know, so sexy. So I threw a third option onto those proposals, which was just like a history of red lingerie. I had done no research into the history of red lingerie. It was really more of a question that came to my mind when I looked at those pieces, like, what is the history of red lingerie? Red lingerie is thought to be so sexy and seductive. And I was just kind of wondering, was that always the case? And if it wasn't, then when did that become the case and why and how? And unanimously, everyone at the Underpinnings Museum chose that topic. So it was kind of funny because then I had to be like, okay, I've done no work. I don't know the answer. Like, I have a question and I have no idea what the answer is. So now I need to find out what it is.
So it kind of started with you. It was just one of those things that just stuck out to you. I feel like with a lot of people that I interview on here, the research is like, it kind of finds them in a way. And it's just something you find, you know, whilst you're doing something else. So by the sounds of it, that was sort of a similar route for you.
Yeah.
So how did this exhibition that you're talking about, the one for Underpinnings, how did it delve into the sort of meanings of the red lingerie, cultural, symbolic, psychological meanings, and how did your research kind of evolve in that realm, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a heavy lifting question.
It is. You can go broad.
Yeah, and we'll get more into it throughout the interview, I'm sure. So I'll just start by saying that the exhibition, I should say, came out. It was published. It went live on the website for Valentine's Day 2022.
Okay.
And in preparation for that, the way that I went about approaching it, basically what you just asked, was taking, you know, a number of those really stunning historical objects in the museum's collection and then just really delving into primary source material, magazines and newspapers for more contemporary things. Also, like, I got to speak with some of the designers who made some of the pieces. Oh, cool. And also looking at secondary sources, you know, what people have written about lingerie and what lingerie means to them, and just scouring everything, including the history of the color red and kind of the color psychology and the cultural history just of the color in general, and put all of that together in order to contextualize those objects and tell that story. Also just really focusing on areas of the collection's strength, because there's not a completely chronological timeline in that exhibition, because there are some gaps in the collection, but I was playing to the strengths of what we did have. One of the most interesting things for researching exactly what you just talked about, like the symbolic and the psychological meanings of red lingerie, was to look at some of those adjectives across history of how these shade names of red lingerie were described. You know, some of them are so evocative of symbolism, essentially. So just things like ruby red or fire red, you know, things like that, spice red, rose red, you know, they're so evocative of all of this cultural meaning. And also motifs too, just things like cherries, fruits, peppers, hearts, obviously Valentine's Day, and, you know, flowers like roses, things like that. This is all tying into kind of different aspects of femininity. So if you want to compare women to flowers, or do you want to compare women to, you know, spicy hot, spicy hot peppers and, you know, sauciness and fire, things like that.
Reminds me a lot of like lipstick colors.
Yeah, very
similar, aren't they? And I suppose the two sort of go hand in hand in a way. Like, I feel like, I don't know, lipstick and underwear is often advertised in similar ways in the past. So yeah, it's interesting that kind of like the color deciding what type of woman you'll be.
Yeah. So obviously there's so much like marketing psychology in that, but it's very interesting.
With that in mind, the exhibition I know spans from, I think I'm right here, the 1860s to 2017.
That is correct for the artifacts in the exhibition. Sure. I did include sort of a final section in the exhibition that's sort of this gallery of influencers that I spoke to in, I guess it was 2021, I spoke with them. So there's like a gallery of images that kind of shows red lingerie, like what it's up to today and what it means to specific people. But yes, that's the record of the objects that are actually in the museum's collection.
So with that in mind, how did the perception and the use of red lingerie evolve from this quite broad time period? Like, were there any major changes, or was there a time period in there that it kind of really had a spike in popularity or a cultural change, so to speak?
Yeah, there are a lot of changes over that time period. And I also want to say that the history of red lingerie, it predates the 1860s. That obviously just happens to be the earliest object in the museum's collection. And so that's where we started. But essentially, if we're looking at the Victorian era, I found some really interesting and sometimes conflicting information about, you know, how red was, you know, considered acceptable and sometimes unacceptable in the Victorian era. And I'm sure that that's not a surprise to anyone who's familiar with Victorian culture and sort of ideas about sexuality. So, for example, I have a lot of great quotes in the exhibition of just, you know, virtue and morality being assigned to colors in women's underwear. And that, you know, white essentially is the best color for underwear, and sometimes maybe faint colored decorations like ribbons and embroidery. And part of the reason that that is honestly has to do with laundry.
Oh, okay.
So there's this idea that, again, really predates the late 19th century, that linen and cotton undergarments, they're white for a reason. Part of that reason is that those fibers are just historically more difficult to dye when compared to like wool and silk, which responds really well to dye. In order to dye linen and cotton, you kind of need some more complicated like chemical processes that not everyone really had down at the time.
Sure.
But also that those undergarments, this probably has come up so many times on your podcast, that that first layer of undergarment is absorbing your, like, soiling your body. I'm trying not to say body fluids. That's not right.
Well, that's what it is.
Sweat. I'm trying to say sweat, basically. All of that is to say that it then became like impractical for, well, why would you want colorful underwear? It's going to be going through the wash so much. So then there's this kind of air of suspicion towards a woman who would want colorful, really like decked out undergarments. You know, like, what are you doing with it? Like, who's going to see it? So it becomes associated with like a lack of modesty, essentially vanity, that it's also like a waste of money. So
is that in that it's not practical? It's not just to like layer your skin. It's the idea is it's meant to be seen if it's colorful, and it's meant to be worn if it's white. Is that kind of where that comes from?
Yeah, that would be the suspicion. And, you know, colorful underwear in the Victorian era in some ways does become associated with sex work, essentially, like high-end sex work. But what makes it more complicated is that that's not the end-all be-all of red in women's undergarments in the Victorian era. There were some ways that it was more acceptable, particularly like red petticoats were actually thought to be very practical because the color red, it hid soil better than like a white petticoat. And red was also thought to be inherently a really warm color. So it was actually believed that if you wore a red petticoat, it would keep you warmer than any other color. Yeah. So there's like this psychological belief about that that red flannel in particular was kind of a protective material that would actually even fend off like certain diseases. So it's like a very interesting that it's acceptable in some ways, but unacceptable in other ways.
I mean, I feel like that's just the Victorian era summed up.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just going to say, like, the exhibition is not all about the Victorian era, so I should probably move on to the next big section of the exhibition that I haven't touched on so much is really about the mid 20th century, sort of that post-World War II, like 1950s and early 1960s fashion. And now this is like a world apart from these sort of conflicting messages from the Victorian era. In the 1950s, red lingerie was, you know, thought to be something that you needed to wear underneath a red dress, for example. And red dresses were very popular in the fall winter season. They're very popular for specific holidays like Christmas. So lingerie sellers were always trying to push like red bras and red slips and foundations during those times of year. And that's the time that a lot of the lingerie advertising, it gets a lot more fun. So we get more of those really fun adjectives describing like red, like fluffy 1950s petticoats as being saucy, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
And this word siren comes up a couple of times. And that's an interesting one to me, because if we're talking about like a siren red, I guess I think of like a police siren, like that kind of thing. So like an alarm. Yeah.
See, I didn't think of that, which is interesting.
Yeah. But at the same time, what you were thinking of is like that sort of like ancient Greek idea of a siren, right? being like a temptress, like a dangerous woman who's going to seduce you. And I think it was used in both of those contexts to, you know, kind of tiptoe around the idea that red was sexy, or particularly like red and black together was sexy and dramatic. But the language around sexiness was not as explicit during the 1950s as it is, you know, later, which is, you know, what we see in kind of that final section of the exhibition, which is, you know, kind of picks up from that story of like the sexual revolution and how all of these cultural changes, they do change women's fashion in general, but also women's lingerie and women's sexuality, and this idea of, you know, women, like it being acceptable for women to be sexy. And sometimes that's kind of turned on its head. So I talk about how in the like 1980s and the 1990s, red lingerie, again, it's sort of this conflicting idea that you can show a woman in advertising wearing red lingerie and call her like smoldering and she looks sexually empowered. But the greater context of the image is that red lingerie is something that a woman should wear to reward men.
Yeah.
And it's like very literally there in the advertising language, like, oh, wow, this smoldering red cherry lace set, like wear it to surprise him after a hard day of work. And I'm reading it like, this is a little bit problematic, like heteronormative, and, you know, kind of, I think it gave a lot of women the ick eventually.
Interesting.
That it's like the male gaze, that this is like a male prescription of what a sexy woman is. And I think a lot of women kind of rebelled against that later on in life.
That's interesting, I think, especially because it's attached to the 60s in a time where people see it being very much like female liberation and women being able to sort of dress in a way that wasn't as restrictive as times before that. But then still, it really wasn't for them. It was primarily for the male gaze, like you were saying. And I think if you only have to look at ads to kind of realize, actually, maybe it wasn't quite as liberating as we think it was.
You can look at it as, well, this is obviously sexual liberation in the fact that like sex is being publicly talked about. And we have this idea that it's okay for women to, you know, like be having sex outside of marriage, that we're more open about our sexuality. But then, yeah, as you said, now we have to question, well, wait, this advertising image is showing a woman who's almost naked and a man in a tuxedo.
Yeah, why is he not almost naked as well? Why is that?
Yeah.
That's equality. Yeah, so
that's basically the whole message of that third wave feminism, right? Was like, that's really the stereotypical advertising image that women kind of got fed up with, because on one hand, we can think of, well, that woman, she's wearing sexy red lingerie. She looks so powerful. But then the man is in a tuxedo, or he's in a suit and tie. And like, isn't that really the sartorial symbol of power? So who has the power in that situation, you know?
True. And she's the one that's more exposed. She's the one that is probably feeling a bit more vulnerable in that situation than he would be. And that's quite telling in itself, right? I guess it's also the idea, she's wearing it for him. She's not wearing it for herself.
I try to turn that on its head in the exhibition by then also showing so much contemporary lingerie in the Underpinnings Museum's collection. It's a real strength of the museum that there are so many like independent, really talented lingerie makers, corset makers who have, you know, their pieces in the collection. And these are obviously their luxury items. They're items that people, you know, spend a lot of money on. And, you know, I kind of argue that people, lingerie enthusiasts and makers, do that because of the power of red lingerie, that it is a tool for self-confidence and self-empowerment, you know, particularly in the 21st century when lingerie enthusiasts are kind of taking that back.
And I guess it's the idea you can have both. You can wear it for someone else if you want. You can also wear it for yourself if you want. But now it's that element of choice that I suppose you don't really see reflected so much in these old ads. And that comparison is, I don't know, I think it's something important to note.
Yeah, what you just said actually just reminded me of a really interesting little tidbit. I think it was from an article in the 1980s that was kind of decoding like what your underwear color means.
Okay. Yep. They loved that, didn't they?
The weird thing is it was published in Cosmo. I think it was 1981, but I think it was written like for men. It was kind of written in the like third person about women.
Oh, weird.
Yes. And what drove me crazy, this might, you know, kind of lean into some other questions you might have had, but it's more of that kind of contrasting ideas. Other articles in Cosmo from the very same year encouraged women to wear red lingerie, like out on dates to like try to seduce men. But then this article about underwear color said that it basically warned men away from women who wore red lingerie.
Oh,
yes,
it was conflicting.
Exactly. It really did my head in, and it was so fascinating. It was saying that, well, women who usually wear red lingerie, they're probably going to really be a handful. They might like smash all your dishes against the wall. Like basically saying they're going to have like mental health issues or something.
Just because they're wearing red. Yeah, that's 100% what's going to happen. It's just, oh, it's bizarre, isn't it?
But the one thing, what you said reminded me of this one thing. What it did add in is that, oh, well, sometimes women will wear like red lingerie if it was given to them by a man. And if that's the case, then that's different. Then that's okay.
Okay. Because the man has allowed her to wear it and he's given her permission.
Yes, it was a gift right? from him. She wouldn't have chosen to wear it herself. She usually would wear like white or, you know, pale pink, but because a man gifted her like sexy red lingerie, then it's okay for her to wear it. And it doesn't say anything bad about her character. But if she has bought it for herself, that's a whole different story. And like, how infuriating is that idea?
Yeah, it really is just, it's so antiquated, that idea. Like, how could you can't tell someone's state of being just because of the color of their underwear. That's just completely, you know, bizarre and ridiculous to think about, isn't it?
And I just hate how it all hinged on, you know, on men's desires.
Yeah.
And that was 1981. Like, it doesn't feel that long ago.
Not that long ago. No.
Yeah.
It really isn't. Like, if it's lived memory, then it's why so many of these ideas, particularly towards underwear and women's sexuality and all that, is still so strong to us and circulating people's ideas, because it's not that long ago. You know, a lot of people grew up thinking that and being told that. And it's just, so it takes time for these things to leave our consciousness.
Absolutely.
The exhibition features 30 objects, if I'm right. How did you choose these objects for the exhibition or these pieces? And which ones stood out to you as the most representative or significant in telling the sort of a broader story of red lingerie in history?
Yeah, choosing those objects was, it's so fun. It's a very interesting puzzle that, you know, you're trying to put together when you're choosing objects for an exhibition. You know, one of the benefits of doing a digital exhibition is you're never really concerned about like physical space.
True.
Yeah. True. Or, you know, movement. If objects, or objects are like strong enough in good enough condition to be mounted. The museum just has these really beautiful photographs that they work with a photographer named Tiggs Rice, who does all of the great photographs photographs. And so those were all at my disposal. So I really got to kind of choose whatever I wanted. I suppose my thought process was just trying to make sure that all of the objects, as beautiful as they were in the exhibition for a reason, that they all told a slightly different piece of the puzzle of the narrative of the history of red lingerie. Sometimes this didn't happen too often, but, you know, if some objects kind of told the same story, then I might want to just choose one so that there's not sort of redundancy in the exhibition. One example of that is in the sort of Victorian section. There's a black corset there that has a really nice red woven trim along the top. And I sort of use that object as a springboard to talk about the combination of black and red and corsetry in the Victorian era. But there is another example in the collection. I actually link to it in that description. There is a black corset in the collection that was entirely sewn with red thread. So it actually is a great example, but you can't see the red thread very well from far away. So that's just one example of, I felt like the one with the red woven trim, you could very immediately see the red, but I obviously still wanted to link to that other piece so that people could see it. But I felt like maybe, you know, the other one was a better example. And in terms of what's representative, I have to say my mind always goes to that first object in the exhibition. It's that 1860s corset. It is just so bold. It is a really bright red color, and it's really unexpected.
I think about to say the word unexpected. In a way,
yeah, it really is. And I think that's really one of my biggest inspirations. Back to that story of me, you know, asking the question about the history of red lingerie, because when you see that corset, you go, what? I wasn't realizing that people had these bright red corsets in the 1860s, but at the same time, it's kind of an unusual piece. It's not necessarily the standard. So like, what's more representative of the history of red lingerie in the Victorian era is probably the other corsets in that section, which are white and drab and black, and they just have these little red details. But I just love how striking that red corset is. In particular, later in the exhibition, there is a corset from a Jean Provocateur from the 1990s. And that corset is red and black, but it's obviously a boudoir costume. It's like probably has plastic boning. Like, it's not something that a woman would like put on and then put on her suit and go out to work in. Like, it's obviously sexy lingerie for the bedroom. So I kind of think if you kind of compare that piece to the piece in the 1860s, which that red corset would not have been red to be a sexy bedroom costume. It probably was red because, like I said, red is associated with warmth and could be considered a practical color in certain ways that you might use it. So it was probably thought to be just a very like hard working corset.
Yeah, like a thermal.
Yeah.
The least sexy thing I can think of.
Exactly.
Thermals. But that's so interesting. The context of these items is so important. You know, even though on the surface they are pretty much the same, and on a first glance it would be maybe difficult to see the difference in them, actually when you start to study them you realize there's so much difference between the two despite how similar they are. I think that's really interesting. It kind of makes me think of like if I saw a red corset like that, my brain wouldn't go to Victorian era thermal wear. I would think of like a 2000s goth kind of style, you know, where it was very much you wear your corsets in bright red and black and purple over your clothes. That's kind of what my association with that kind of clothing is, or underwear is. So that's really interesting. It's like modern.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way. And that's really what got my imagination firing up. Like, what is this doing here? And so I think it's just so incredible that the Underpinnings Museum has it, because it's those objects that you don't expect to come across that really challenge our understanding of fashion history.
And that's why we love fashion history so much.
Exactly.
There's always something new to be found out.
There really is. It's so fun. It's a very rewarding interest to have.
Totally. Next question. In what ways has red been used to express societal perceptions of feminine sexuality and empowerment throughout history? I know we've sort of already spoken about this, but I'm sure there's new time periods or tidbits that you've got.
What became very clear to me in doing the research for this exhibition was there's kind of a twofold idea here that I'm looking at. I'm looking at how acceptable was it for women to wear red in general? And then, you know, for their underwear is kind of a whole different layer to that. And obviously, throughout fashion history, people and women have always worn red. It's not necessarily that there was ever a time that women couldn't wear red, but there were definitely some ideas that red, it's inherently a very bold color. It's daring. And women were not always supposed to be bold and daring, you know? Sure. So there are, you know, these primary source quotes that I found from the Victorian era that, you know, just praise women who wear like subdued colors or wear white because it means that they're modest and that's more beautiful and that's more desirable. There's a quote from 1871 in Harper's Bazaar that said, I'll just quote from it directly, drab is not in itself holier than scarlet one bit, and the subdued colors are no more favorable to virtue than they are to artistic beauty. So that quote is the author is trying to say that like it's okay for women to wear scarlet. Women don't have to walk around wearing drab colors. But the only reason that someone would be motivated to say that is if other people were saying the opposite, you know. So then by the 1950s, we're not really questioning whether it's okay for women to want to be bold and, you know, wear makeup and do themselves up and be glamorous. But it's a whole different story to think about women in red lingerie, because now all of a sudden, when we take the woman's clothes off and she's in her underwear and she's still looking bold and she's looking in charge and she's looking confident, that is actually kind of a intimidating thing for men, right? This idea of a sexually empowered woman who wants to engage in sex, possibly, if that's how we want to interpret it.
Yeah, yeah.
That she feels confident about her body. That's dangerous. and feels in charge of her sexuality. And so that's kind of what we see people sort of grappling with after the 1960s and when that sexuality is okay. We're still not so sure if we want women to, I kind of interpret it as like women enjoying sex, right? And women being sexually experienced. I don't know if that's too big of a leap to make.
I don't know. That was kind of what I thought. I also kind of associated this idea of, you know, to find out she's wearing red lingerie under her clothes, you know, it's sort of like she was almost expecting it as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
Scary thing that she preempted this, that, you know, the man doesn't have control over, he's deciding whether they do it or not. She in her own way was also deciding whether that was something that she was going to do. And I suppose maybe there's an element of that in there. I don't know. That also might be a wrong interpretation. That was kind of what I thought of.
Well, what I find to be so interesting is like, yes, right off the bat, as soon as I started this research, I assume, well, red is a very sexy color for lingerie. And throughout my research, I find that a lot of times black lingerie or even white lingerie is thought to be, you know, the sexiest. And that's really what got me thinking like, well, why? I think part of it has to do with this idea that if you're like that red is giving off this signal of sexual empowerment and enthusiasm, whereas black lingerie is maybe a little bit more mysterious or demure. And then white lingerie gives off this idea of innocence. And I think I already said something gave me the ick in this podcast, but that kind of gives me the ick that then I'm asking myself like, okay, so we're not thinking that the woman who, you know, really enjoys sex and wants sex is the sexiest, right? We're looking for the women who are not expecting it, who might be very innocent and inexperienced. So there's, I guess, just a lot of like color psychology. And yeah. Also,
it's also loaded, isn't it? You don't realize like that's quite gross. But it is very telling of that kind of like association with young, being young and being innocent with like the most attractive traits. And that's just, it's just weird, isn't it? And that is really interesting. Yeah. I guess I kind of hadn't really thought about it before, but yeah, I think even nowadays we still can't really help but associate colors with certain paragons of virtue or like types of people or, you know, expectations. And I guess it all comes from this, doesn't it?
And I have had years to think about this.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, oh, I totally need to like unlearn what I've been taught about these things. You know, it's just a color. At the end of the day, it shouldn't mean these things, but we've been told that it does. And so you sort of can't help but create those associations.
What you just said just sounds so much like that quote from 1871, where that person was just saying like, drab is not holier than scarlet. Like, it's just a color. Like, it's a pretty color.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because I don't think I even realized that I thought these things. And, you know, if I'm someone that is interested in this and, you know, studies this for fun, and I'm still sort of can't help but have these associations, you know, that's 100% people who don't even really think about it. It's going to be there, isn't it? Without them even really knowing the subconscious element of it. With all that in mind, in terms of, you know, different time periods and different expectations, how does understanding the history of red and the sort of implications of the color red in lingerie contribute to, you know, our modern perspectives on fashion and on being feminine and societal norms in general?
I've spent a lot of, you know, this interview talking about the past because we do love history after all. But I must admit that the majority of the pieces in the exhibition are more modern because, you know, the Underpinnings Museum has so many modern pieces and red has been used in such interesting ways and diverse ways in those pieces. So it really does shine a spotlight on modern red lingerie and, you know, the creativity, the different reasons why red is used, the different shades of red. You can have a deep regal red and, you know, purpley reds, or you can, you know, have bright blood red and try to, you know, tap into those sort of like darker aspects, or the bright, you know, love hearts and combine it with pink or combine with gold. And using these pieces, these luxury lingerie pieces, as these tools to enhance your own self-confidence, your confidence in your body, you know, your own sense of empowerment, whether that's just self-empowerment or if that is sexual empowerment. You know, I think that if that's the place that we start from, then it's interesting to look at the past and to, you know, realize that that was not always the case, that there's deeper history, that there's deeper cultural sort of layers of significance to the idea of having bright colored underwear at all, or specifically red underwear. You know, this idea that red underwear was kind of marketed as a tool to seduce men in the 80s and 90s. We can look at that through our eyes today and realize, well, that really erases queer people, asexual people, or, you know, people who don't have sex with men. And we might not market lingerie that way today, but that was very acceptable in those days. And it's interesting to look back on that. And just the fact that, you know, in the Victorian era and the early 20th century, women were just not supposed to have this very bright, colored, frilly, luxurious lingerie at all, and that you would really be considered quite a suspicious person if you were interested in that sort of thing. Whereas today, it's really not a problem.
And I guess it comes down to what we're saying about, you know, wearing it for yourself or wearing it for someone else. And for the most part, if you are someone who is asexual or not, you know, involving yourselves in sexual scenarios, you are probably just wearing it for yourself. You can just wear sexy lingerie that's bright red for your own, you know, own self-esteem. And I think that's definitely something that will be changing and has changed. So I think that's an interesting thing to note, you know, these old ads and historical contexts just are so limiting and undiverse.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to add to that as well. The exhibition largely focuses on women wearing lingerie, and our conversation has really focused on women, you know, for a reason, because historically that's, you know, who lingerie was marketed towards. But it isn't only women who wear lingerie. Men are interested in lingerie and having sexy underwear. Non-binary people are as well. And that's something that I also shine, I was able to shine a spotlight on in that last section of the exhibition, where I worked with, you know, different social media influencers who all really were able to bring different perspectives to this story, which also includes people who use mobility aids, people who are chronically ill, and wearing red lingerie helps them feel like, you know, more of a person and less like a patient. You know, people from different backgrounds who are able to use red lingerie and are not, you know, historically were not people who would appear in lingerie advertising, you know, but that's changing today.
That's such a good point as well. And it does go back to the idea of, you know, you also don't have to be wearing sexy underwear in certain contexts. You can just wear it around the house if you want. It's, it doesn't have to be as loaded as it used to be in terms of like red lingerie equals sexualization. It doesn't have to be that way. We're sort of unlearning these ideas that old advertisements and the article from the 80s you're talking about has told us. Why does it have to have that association? At the end of the day, it's just, it's a piece of fabric. We've given it these contexts and put these expectations on these clothes.
Yeah. What you just said reminds me of an idea that also kind of popped up multiple times in my research, which is this idea of wearing sexy lingerie under your clothes as a secret that no one else knows. And I have some kind of complex feelings about this idea, because sometimes I'm a little bit suspicious. So, for example, the co-founder of Agent Provocateur, Joseph Corre, who's Vivian Westwood's son, by the way, very
really?
Interesting.
Really? I did not know that.
Yes.
Oh, nepo baby.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all one of them.
So that brand opened, it was founded in 1994. Mm. And he, you know, gave some interviews in the 90s, you know, the mid to late 90s, talking about this idea of, you know, trying to market to women that you can buy this sexy luxury lingerie and wear it under your clothes as a secret for yourself. But sometimes I kind of interpret that, especially if we're in the 1990s as well, that kind of sounds like a man's fantasy to me still.
Yeah, yeah.
I might really be sounding,
I can kind of see both. I can see both sides.
Exactly. So I do then see later, and in some of the interviews that I was just talking about that I did with these influencers, like people do wear sexy lingerie and red lingerie underneath their clothes to give them a boost of confidence. But I want to hear that from the person who's wearing it rather than the lingerie seller or the people writing the magazines, you know?
Yeah. And I guess it's also when you said that, you know, the being a man's fantasy, it kind of like gives them a excuse or an allowance to maybe sexualize women, everybody. Because it's this idea of, oh,
that's what I'm saying.
Like, on the outside, oh, who knows what she looks like underneath? It gives me an excuse and a reason to be allowed to creep on her, basically, which is quite scary.
Yeah, exactly. So I have mixed feelings about it, but at the same time, I completely encourage people, you know, to try that if you think that that might actually give you a boost of confidence. But do not walk around imagining every person and woman you see to be in red lingerie, because that's not cool.
That's not So I think it's like anything, so long as you're doing it, not necessarily for the right reasons, but you understand the reasons that you're doing it and you're not expecting there to be any other implications because you've been told that's, it has to be your decision. And there's an element still there of a man telling women that they should do this.
But let's take it back. And that's what we're doing in the 21st century. We're taking back red lingerie.
We are, exactly. We're unlearning all these things.
Exactly.
It is tricky. It is hard. You don't realize, like I said earlier, you know, what you've been told and you don't even remember these things happening or being told these things. They're just sort of in there. And I think, yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. I guess also because, you know, a time where we were teenagers and growing up, magazines were still pretty big. I used to get magazines every week and you sort of just take it as gospel what you're being told there. Whereas this new generation of young people sort of have other places to go and other voices to listen to, rather than just one article in Cosmo told you this one thing and then that's the truth.
Yeah, it's very, very true. It's a whole different landscape now.
So with that in mind, do you think there are any lessons from the past or historical narratives that we can use to inform modern discussions on lingerie and the idea of self-expression and particularly the color red?
You know, something I find so interesting is that this past year, 2023, I was interviewed for multiple outlets who were running stories on underwear as outerwear, essentially.
Okay.
That was a big trend for 2023.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even going braless and like showing your nipples. So there were a lot of people in my emails like asking for thoughts about like underwear and nipples and like, things.
Out of context, it's very strange.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting conversation to have, but it makes me think about how really in every section of the exhibition with the Underpinnings Museum, there are these little tidbits about women showing their lingerie. So in the 19th century, there's an idea that your petticoat might show, like by your ankles, you know, if you have to sort of hike up your dress, your petticoat might show, or your, you know, the bottom of your cage crinoline might show. So those were kind of commonly red. And then, you know, in the 1950s, there was also this messaging of like, well, wouldn't it be lovely if you were wearing this bright red slip and it just happened to show underneath your hem? And then in the 80s and 90s, it's even more explicit, like maybe you should show your red bra strap when you're out on a date. So
low back dresses like, and things like that in the 70s, I bet there's.
So I don't know. It's like it just makes me reflect on this history of now today, I guess, underwear is outerwear is really having a moment. People are walking around in briefs on the runway. And it just makes me reflect on the history of doing that, whether it's red or any other color, I guess.
I guess also it makes me think of corsets. We sort of mentioned it earlier, but you weren't meant to see a corset. It was there to go under your clothes. Whereas slowly over time, corsets became the fashion piece in themselves and were worn like a top, you know, you wear it with jeans or whatever. And that's the outfit. I'm always curious to think what a Victorian woman would think if she saw, you know, a woman in the 2000s wearing a corset and jeans as part of her outfit, you know? It's sort of this idea of what used to be underwear becoming outerwear. It's interesting.
Yeah, corset tops are so big. You know, Vivienne Westwood is a big designer who helps popularize that idea. Mm. But these like beautiful corset tops with bright colors and trimming, obviously no one would wear that underneath your clothes. But we still have shapewear today. I mean, there's tons of shapewear brands. You obviously have like Spanx and things, but like Kim Kardashian is going huge with Skims. And, you know, it's not to say that you wouldn't wear like Skims as normal clothing, but they're not frilly and colorful. They're kind of, they're sold in like skin tone ranges because they're like supposed to be underwear.
Yeah, yeah.
Actual underwear.
Yeah. But that's also interesting because I feel like when she started that company, it was very much underwear, shapewear. And now a lot of those pieces are being worn as outerwear even, you know, like bike shorts became huge. I feel like a couple summers ago, bike shorts and a t-shirt. But bike shorts were always just you wear them under a skirt. But then slowly they also just became fashion in their own right, which is interesting. It can happen that quickly.
Yeah. Fashion is crazy today. Like it's really all over the place. I don't know. It must be a really hard time to be a fashion journalist.
I know. I think it's just we're at the point where everything's been done. So we're just grasping at straws for something that's a bit different.
And truly,
you know, I've also seen, this reminds me of it, that whale tails are coming back.
Oh my God. You're right. And I've seen them on campus. It's interesting being a teacher at colleges, and particularly teaching at FIT. I get to see some really great like student street style, and I have seen them.
Yeah.
The thong, like the very intentionally visible thong. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm not judging anyone. The feeling is just more like, oh my gosh, like we're going back in time, that kind of thing.
I just think, oh my God, it must just be so uncomfortable. Like I could not go about my day like that. Oh my God. Like that's too much for me. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, fashion is pain or whatever the saying is, something like that.
Yes.
Coming back. Let's round off with one last question. Can you tell me about how you've used all of this research, being, you know, the research from the Victorian times all the way to what you're just talking about, sort of studying present day associations with lingerie, and how have you used and adapted that? Have you written anything? Are there any exhibitions that you've created?
It is kind of an interesting thing that all of this research was done for an exhibition, instead of having done the research first and then doing the exhibition second. So really, ever since the exhibition went live in February of 2022, I have continued to build on it. So I kind of developed a lecture that I've given several times now with the New York Adventure Club that just gives a straightforward story of red lingerie from like 1560 to today. So that includes some areas that are not included in the exhibition, like the 1920s and the 1930s, because it wasn't such a popular lingerie color, but the perceptions of red lingerie at that time were quite interesting, especially because red was the color of communism in the 1920s.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, you're right. You hadn't even thought of that.
so there were definitely some interesting thoughts that were being published in those times. So I give that lecture. I don't know when the next time I'll be giving it is, but certainly look out for it if anyone's interested. I love giving that talk. Also, in October of 2023, I did a conference presentation with the Association of Dress Historians, just specifically about that last section of the exhibition where I spoke with the diverse group of influencers. It was a conference that was really specifically dedicated to fashioning the margins. So just looking at areas of fashion history that aren't so studied and groups of people who are marginalized. So it was really an honor to get to just talk about. I really just tried to shine a spotlight on the people who I had the privilege of working with. And only just last month, I submitted my very first draft ever of a like an academic journal article about the history of red lingerie. It's very, very intimidating trying to actually publish scholarly writing. Like I love speaking at academic conferences because I am very happy to give like a 10 or a 20 minute presentation. But the journal article is a whole other story. So I am hopeful that it will be published, but I'm not sure if it will be. But
sure.
Look out for that. If anyone's listening in the future, check back in.
You can only try. You can only try. Like, even just sending it off is more than I think most people do. So, like, amazing for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I really patted myself on the back for sending it off. But then when I like got feedback, I was like, oh, shoot.
Yeah, I know. You're like, I'm so vulnerable now.
Yeah, I really felt like self-congratulatory when it was off. And I didn't have to think about feedback and things. But also, I just want to add that I still work with the Underpinnings Museum. After doing this exhibition, they invited me to come back and to be a member of the team. So I'm part of the committee now. And it's wonderful to continue my work with them. And, you know, sometimes I do research that goes up in the collection, and I do their social media. So definitely, if anyone is unfamiliar with Underpinnings Museum, check out our website, underpinningsmuseum.com, and follow us on social media. So Instagram and the platform formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah. Okay, great. I mean, I'll share all of that. I'll include a photo on my Instagram page, and all the information to find the exhibition and find Summer will be there.
All right. Well, happy Valentine's Day
to Valentine's Day.
listeners.
Yeah. I've never really done too much for Valentine's before, but this year I want to start enjoying it more. You know, it's got such an iconic visual, the color scheme, everything is great. So I kind of want to lean into that a little bit more. So I thought, that's why I'm doing this series.
Many years ago now, one of my first conversations with my friend Elena, very prominent lace historian on social media, she is a huge fan of Valentine's Day, and talking with her about how much she loves the hearts and the lace and the colors and the, you know, baking cookies and being with friends. That conversation really stayed with me, and it made me appreciate Valentine's Day more as being like a very aesthetic and fun and lighthearted holiday.
Yeah, totally. And it doesn't have to be romantic love. It can just be friendship and family and all these nice things. So I want to kind of get into it a bit more and appreciate it for what it is, but mostly because of the aesthetics. Thank you so much, Summer, for chatting with me about that. What an interesting and multifaceted episode that was. So many interesting concepts and ideas, particularly around the role of women and the male gaze and perceptions towards the female body. Really fascinating and perfect for a Valentine's themed episode. I hope you all enjoyed listening, and I hope you learned something as always, and maybe this opened up a line of thinking that you haven't considered before. That's always something I hope to gain with this podcast, and something I always hope to gain when I bring new people on or people I've spoken to before about new topics, because everyone has such interesting points of view. Summer is available all over socials, on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter, or now X. So do have a look for her there. She makes some fantastic reels and TikTok videos all about tidbits of fashion history. So you're really missing out if you're not following her. Also follow the Underpinnings Museum. They can be found on Instagram too. And as I said, they offer free, very accessible digital exhibitions on their website, underpinningsmuseum.com, where you can see some of these pieces that we've spoken about specifically for this episode online, but also pieces from their new exhibitions and past exhibitions too. So do have a look over there. I have one more episode in this Valentine's series, so keep your ears open for that if you liked talking about the history of underwear and concepts of sexuality and all those interesting things. As always, please do leave me a rating and a written review wherever you listen to your podcast, because I love reading what you guys have to say. Follow me on my Instagram at Silhouettes Podcast, where I'll also be sharing some images to connect to this episode so you can see some of these pieces and find out a little bit more about them specifically. But I hope you had a fun time, everyone. Let me know if you have any opinions towards this topic that we didn't manage to touch on, because it is a really huge, broad-ranging topic and there's so much to talk about within it. But with all that being said, I'll end it here, and I'll see you in the next one. Stay fab, everyone.